You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is Matthew Rushing. Matthew, how's life on the station treating you this week?
Well, actually, it's pretty good, Chris. I don't know if you saw this Saturday on my Twitter. I posted a brand new Replimat mug that I was able to find on eBay, just like one of the Replimat mugs they would use on Deep Space Nine, one of the kind of square looking blue ones. And so I was very excited. So life on the station for me is fantastic. I am drinking lots of Ractogino. I'm really hyper right now, as you can probably tell. And so I may talk really fast in this podcast.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's what happens when you drink too much Ractogino, especially if you have an authentic Replimat mug to drink it in.
Yeah, and luckily I didn't even get scalped by Quark. I mean, he's selling those things for hundreds, but mine was very reasonable.
Yeah, I was going to say, now, did you get the mug that has Quark's face on it? You know, the promotional mug that he put together that really pissed off Worf?
Come to Quark's crushes, bud. Come right now. Go, Quark.
Run!
Oh, I love the part where my name rotates around.
Luckily, I think that my production line was after Worf had made him change it. And so, luckily, no, I do not have Quark's face plastered on my Ractogino mug. You know, I might actually drink less Ractogino if Quark's face was on my mug. So, thankfully, that's not a problem.
Well, the reason we're talking so much about Quark right now is because Quark is the topic of today's episode of The Orb. We've been working our way through some of the main characters. We've talked about Sisko, we've talked about Dr. Bashir, we've talked about Odo, and now we're going to talk about Quark. So, a little bit more lighthearted this week than usual, but, you know, Quark is still a serious character on the show.
One of the cool things that I really liked while kind of looking into Quark was, I don't know if you know this, Chris, but one of my favorite, actually my favorite film of all time is Casablanca. And I loved finding out that they actually based Quark's relationship with Odo as an homage to the film, and Quark kind of having that Humphrey Bogart role and Odo having that Claude Rains role. And I think that's fantastic. I mean, you can see that in their interplay with each other. It works really well. You know, they did mix the personalities up a little bit. There, they kind of flipped personalities and everything. But I think that's a lot of fun. So for me, getting to look into Quark this week was really interesting. And kind of seeing, too, in his early life, having his family life be somewhat strained with his father and his mother, and of course, you know, what he would consider his idiot brother, really shaping who he was and how he kind of interacted with the world for the rest of his life. What did you think about that? How do you feel like Quark's relationship with his family helped shape who he was?
Yeah, that's one thing I was going to ask you about, because we find out in the backstory of Quark that his father was, I guess, not really a very good Ferengi, in the sense that he had a lot of failures in his business life. And his father made the excuses for that, that it was actually Quark's mother's fault. You know, it was Ishka's fault that she was kind of this domineering wife that was controlling him and causing his business failures. And so Quark took his father's word for that, because in the Ferengi society, you know, I mean, women are definitely treated as second-class citizens. They're not allowed to wear clothing. They're not allowed to conduct business or earn profits or anything. So it's natural that a young Quark would take his father's word and assume that, okay, well, you know, dad says it's mom's fault that all my business endeavors fail. So, okay there. So I think that, well, it strained his relationship with his mother, which we know. And in turn, I think affected his relationship with his brother Rom as well, because Rom was maybe a bit more sensitive and was much closer to Moogie, as they call her, than Quark was. And I think that also contributed to Quark feeling that his brother was an idiot, as you said.
Well, I think one of the things too is that it drives Quark to want to be the best Ferengi he can be.
Yeah.
And yet I think he's still very impacted by the kind of man his father was as well. You know, Quark isn't necessarily really good at business, as we see throughout the series. I mean, he's always scheming and planning and all those things, but, you know, the poor guy just never can make as much latinum as a lot of other Ferengi we see.
Well, you say he's not good at business, I think, in the sense of a Ferengi being good at business.
Exactly.
His actual operation of his business and his success at it is much more like an ordinary human running a business might be. You know, that's how businesses operate. Now, in terms of being a Ferengi, yeah, maybe he's not as good at business as his fellow Ferengi might be.
Mm. And it was really interesting, too, to find out that, you know, Quark, in a lot of ways, and the reason he doesn't get along with his mother is that they're very similar. And, you know, when you have that kind of personality where you're really similar to somebody, you tend to clash a lot because you see in each other the things you don't really like. And I think that happens a lot with Quark and his mom, especially as we meet her through the series and all the issues that they go through. They have such forceful personalities, but they're on opposite sides of what they think it should mean to be a Ferengi.
Right. Yeah. So we see here that maybe Quark strived to be the best Ferengi to make up for his father's failures and maybe to prove that he could maybe transcend what he saw as his mother's interference anyway in his father's life. But later on, you know, we find out, he comes to learn that in actuality, his father was simply a bad businessman, and that it was his mother's prudence with the finances that actually, you know, held the family together and kept everything from falling apart. So, you know, that allowed him to see his mother in a different light. And I also think that that could have some impact on how he ultimately conducted his business as well. It kind of reminds me how with Vulcans, you know, you have the pure logic, but then you see someone like Spock by the time of the Undiscovered Country who has learned to balance Vulcan logic with humans' ability to see different sides of an issue and have a more measured approach to life. And in the same way here with Quark, there's the very strict Ferengi approach to business. There are the rules of acquisition. There's like, this is how you conduct business and life as a Ferengi. But seeing his mother's point of view and how she held the family together, how she has some different thoughts on what it means to be a Ferengi, plus the influence, of course, of the Federation and all the people who he's around on the station, really changed him.
Definitely changes Quark a lot. And I think in some ways, too, he gets the kindness that he shows in the series from his mother as well. You know, she's a good businesswoman. She has great lobes for business, as the Ferengi would say. But she's also not maniacal about it, as some Ferengi can be. You know, just completely cutthroat. She's willing to make deals and conduct business, but in a way that's, you know, not hurting people. And honestly, I think this rubs off on Quark, and he doesn't even know it. in some way throughout his childhood. And I think that might be one of the reasons we see him being this Ferengi that feels a little bit closer to, you know, somebody who might be a part of the Federation than, say, somebody like Brunt or his cousin Gala, obviously, who's willing to put anybody in jeopardy just to make some latinum. And so, yeah, Quark is definitely a different type of Ferengi, especially since, you know, the first time we were introduced to Armin Shimmerin as a Ferengi, it was in The Last Outpost. And he was definitely dressed differently, carried a laser whip, which I'm kind of sad that Quark never got to show off at all. Yeah, and so the Ferengi definitely evolve by the time Quark comes around.
Yeah, I do wonder if there are any laser whip programs in the holosuites there at Quark's. There's got to be.
Isn't that just a part of Vulcan Love Slave number 5?
Yeah, it probably is. Especially with that Ferengi influence there. All right. Well, let's talk about it. Just expand upon this and talk about how Quark, I almost, when I thought about this, I thought of it like the Grinch, you know, where the Grinch's heart grows 3 sizes, that Quark kind of grows a heart himself as he interacts with those on the station, even going back to Terak Nor, because during the occupation of Bajor, he was kind of sympathetic toward the Bajorans. You know, he would sell them food at cheap prices, which is something you would not imagine a Ferengi doing because they're driven purely by profit. So, you know, so what if these Bajoran people are suffering? I'm not going to sell them the food. The Cardassians will buy it. They'll pay full price or whatever approach he has to business. But actually, he kind of felt for the Bajorans and he tried to help them. And then after the Bajorans drove the Cardassians away and Starfleet came in and Sisko arrives on the station, you know, he cuts a deal with Sisko and he decides to stick around and help rebuild the community. And it wasn't necessarily a case of him seeing great profit in that because the station was in shambles and, you know, it seemed like everyone was going to be leaving. And sure, you know, they discover the wormhole and all this new traffic's going to be coming in. But even before that happens, I think, you know, he's willing to stick around and actually help.
That's true. Although I do have to say it's difficult to not stick around when Commander Sisko is twisting your arm because your nephew, who you sent off in a nefarious feat, has gotten caught by the shapeshifter on the station. And you're basically being blackmailed to stay. You know, it's not all because he has a heart of latinum.
Well, that's true, but isn't that a human reaction? Now, what if Brunt's nephew were caught, or Gala's nephew were caught? Do you think they would necessarily care? If it's more profitable to them to let their nephew go off to prison, wouldn't that possibly be the Ferengi way?
Yeah, you do. I mean, that's definitely a point, and there's some rules of acquisition about family and getting in the way of profit, and so they're definitely willing to sell their family out when it comes to the fact of making profit. So I can definitely see where you're coming from and the fact that even here, Quark is showing some tendencies toward, you know, a more human emotion. And yeah.
I think so, but he's right. Resisting them at this point for sure. You know, it's at the beginning of the series when we first meet him, he definitely doesn't have the flexibility or the soft spot that we see later on in the series. But I think the seeds are there, and he's resisting them. But if he were purely a Ferengi, purely driven by profit, I think he would have let Nog go off to the prison. He would have packed everything up in the bar, and he would have left the station.
You know, I think that in some ways, Quark really does have a heart of latinum. He just continues to actually make deposits into that heart as the series goes on to grow that feeling of being a kind of more of a stand-up Ferengi, you know, one that's willing to stand for what he believes in, not just what his people believe in. And he kind of mixes ideas from the Federation and Bajorans and Cardassians and Ferengi, kind of puts them all together in kind of a very syncretistic belief system that Quark has. Because he's actually somewhat honorable in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And he has, you know, a sense of duty and loyalty, especially to his family in a way that some Ferengi don't. And he really doesn't want to be hurting anyone with his, you know, schemes. And right. Again, that makes him different from the other Ferengi. Yeah.
I think you're right that he does incorporate aspects of the Bajorans and the Federations and everyone who he encounters. But I think it surprises even himself that it's happening. He's not intentionally taking the, you know, sometimes we, especially like in my case, I've lived in various different places around the world. And, you know, so I've absorbed different elements from different cultures and, you know, I see this thing that appeals to me and that appeals to me and this thing that doesn't. And so I've kind of over the years, you know, incorporated different things into myself to follow, you know, a path that I believe in. But in the case of Quark, you get the feeling like he's absorbing these values from the humans, but he doesn't want to, but it's happening. And it's like surprising him that it's happening, but it is developing his own unique person. But he's along for the ride, and maybe sometimes he's looking around like, where am I going here? It's kind of a surprise to him.
He does kind of explain it in saying that, you know, the Federation is like root beer. You know, it's bubbly and it's sweet and it's disturbingly disgusting the first time you taste it. And then the more you drink it, the more you start to like it until you can't stop, you know? And so in that way, he's been influenced and he can't stop. You know, he's gotten to that point where I just can't stop myself anymore. I think that does really make for a great character arc for Quark. And something we can, I think, learn from is the fact that, you know, where we are going to pick up the values of the people that we hang out with. You know, if I hang out with a certain type of people, you know, if I hang out with a bunch of communists, leftist crazy wackos, or a bunch of right-wing crazy wackos, whichever side you want to pick, you know, I'm going to start to adopt these kind of values because that's what the people around me, the people I care about, espouse. And, you know, Quark's best friends really on the station are people like Odo or Jadzia, you know, people who have very strict moral centers to them. And that really does rub off on Quark, even though he might not want it to.
Oh, that's a good point. And even Kira in that sense as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I think what you're saying there is that on both sides of any issue, there are extremes where
right.
You know, yes. there's small groups on both sides of any issue that go to the extreme. And then in the middle, you know, the majority in the middle is a lot more balanced. But, you know, if you align yourself with an extreme, it's very easy to get caught up in that and to start to adapt that view, even if maybe initially you didn't have such a strong view. It is the influence of what you're around. And someone like Jadzia, someone like Odo, Kira, even Commander Sisko, they are all very grounded people who are adaptive. I would say you can be flexible in their views, even Odo, even though it doesn't seem that way at times. And that does all rub off on Quark. And you start to see him kind of seeing things in that way as well.
Well, and I think for the Ferengi, you know, the Federation is kind of an extremist ideal, you know, because it's so antithetical to the way that they live. So that does have a tendency to rub off on people. And, you know, thankfully, it gives us a very nice character arc with Quark to see him kind of change and grow and move very gradually. And maybe not as much as the other characters do. But, you know, the Quark from the first season is definitely not the same as the Quark from the seventh season, as much as he'd like to say he was.
Yeah, you don't notice it happening as much, right? But if you go and you watch Quark in the final parts of the seventh season, when he's actually, you know, playing a role in the resolution of the war, and you look at Quark from Emissary in the first season, you definitely can see quite a big change in him there. Let's talk a little bit about his relationship with Odo. Now, we did this last week in reverse when we talked about what did Quark teach Odo. And this week, I mean, I want to take a little bit of a different angle on it, which is how Quark kept Odo on his toes. But how did that interplay between Odo and Quark affect both of them? How did the fact that Quark knew that Odo was going to let a lot of the small stuff slide, how did that help him develop more of this kind of ethical or moral center that we've been talking about a little bit here? Because he knew that there were certain lines that were established, and he could kind of conduct his business within that framework and not be in trouble with the security of the station.
You know, I think one of the things is that, honestly, by knowing that he could get away with the little things, but he was never going to get away with that big thing, actually helps change Quark without him even knowing it. Because I think he doesn't even try necessarily to go for that super big stuff after a while. Especially, you know, Armin Shimmerman talked about this, I think it was on the DVD sets and in interviews he's done, is that, you know, Quark, by the end of the second season, really gets toned down in what he does nefariously. And, you know, his worst offense then becomes, you know, when he starts selling weapons. But that's an anomaly.
That's the one really big one from the whole series. Exactly. And that's something I want to talk about a little bit later on too, because it's such a big turning point for him.
But really, in the end, that's kind of an anomaly for Quark. You know, the things that he does kind of tend to be on accident. You know, the other one that I thought was, you know, really big that he kind of does get away with, because I don't even think Odo realizes what it was, is when Varad comes and Quark has been helping them, you know, get to the station illegally. But, you know, they've come to steal the Dax symbiont. And, you know, Quark, obviously, if he had known that, he would never have been involved because of the way he feels about Giant Zia already. And yet, it's kind of his greed that gets in the way there. But that's one of, again, that's an anomaly. That's one of those things that very few things that kind of get away from Quark and even Odo at that point. So,
and it's an unintentional transgression there too, because he thinks he's just, you know, doing one of his normal little schemes.
Exactly.
He doesn't realize what Varad is actually up to. But that does have a big serious impact on Jadzia. And a very weird episode too. That episode, Invasive Procedures, feels very disjointed to me. Like they had an idea there, but it just kind of meanders a little bit for me.
Yeah. But I definitely think that Odo keeping an eye on Quark knowing that he's always being watched, never knowing where Odo's going to be, obviously he's a shapeshifter, really does limit him and therefore train him in some ways to only do the things that he knows he will be able to get away with, because it's not really worth trying to risk his neck, because he knows Odo will come down on him if he really goes astray. And I think that this helps change Quark's character unintentionally, because he doesn't even know it's happening.
Right. He's just focusing on the little things, like, you know, fixing racquetball games to try to steal customers right. from the competing bar, or trying to organize a vole fight, or these little things
which
like that.
Was really funny when he and Warren got caught for vole fighting.
I like when he also came up with the sexual hologram of Kira.
Oh gosh.
And then she sabotages him by putting his head on her body when Tyron goes in. So
yeah, that was I mean, obviously that's Jeffrey Combs there, which, I mean, he's everywhere.
He is everywhere.
But it was such a great scene because, I mean, obviously it's Nana's body. And then they superimpose that quark head, and it's just the most horrendous thing you've ever seen. It's good payback.
Yeah. At least she has a sense of humor when she gets back.
That's true. She will. She's going to give it to you as good as you gave it to her. So.
Yeah. Well, some of his other schemes, I think of his schemes much of the way I think of Earth in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. They are mostly harmless. So we talked about racquetball. We talked about voles and the Kira Hala program. What are some other quark schemes that stand out to you?
The one that I really like the most, I think, is the one where he thinks he's going to get all of Morn's latinum.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, when Morn, who mourns for Morn?
Yes.
And, you know, he is willing to do just about anything and everything, you know, to get this latinum, because it's a ton of latinum. And you get to this point where everything just keeps snowballing and snowballing and snowballing until, of course, you know, everybody's been caught and Morn comes back because he faked his own death. And it was just fantastic episode because it kind of showed Quark really is willing to go to endless lengths to get his hands on as much latinum as he can. And he's willing to compromise himself, but he's not necessarily willing to compromise everyone else. And so I think that really showed just some of his growth. You know, he wasn't really putting anybody else in harm in that episode, but he's willing to put himself in a lot of risky places just to get his hands on a ton of latinum.
And isn't that kind of a human trait as compared to a Ferengi trait? Right? Because, you know, ourselves, if we have some business venture that we want to attempt and we're not sure how it might turn out, we're still often willing to put ourselves into a situation where a lot is at risk personally, but we'll try to minimize involvement of others because we don't want to affect them if something doesn't turn out. Whereas again, I think being an ordinary Ferengi, he would have, you know, tried to pull in everyone and maybe even minimize the risk to himself. So he's already, even in that situation, I think flipped quite a bit.
Definitely. One of the neatest things I think to see about him is that change in him. And one of the neat things, too, as we talked about already, is the fact that a lot of his other relationships on the station do have an impact on him. They begin to, you know, have a kind of a molding effect. What were some of your favorite relationships that Quark has with other people on the station other than Odo?
Well, he had so many, you know, limited interactions, at least what we saw on screen, characters, it's hard for me sometimes to frame, you know, say his interaction with someone like O'Brien. But one that does stand out to me, interestingly, is his relationship with Nog. And again, if you go back to the pilot episode, the whole, you know, setup for Quark is the fact that Nog has been caught by Odo and Quark has to make a deal with Sisko to keep Nog out of prison. And as time goes on, you know, I think Quark sees Nog as this Ferengi kid who should be raised in traditional, maybe conservative Ferengi values, taught about business. But of course, Nog's influence from his father is going to be completely different. And then Nog, being a kid, is going to absorb the culture that he is growing up in. So it's very natural that Nog is going to absorb this Federation and Bajoran culture, especially because of his friendship with Jake. And he's going to follow a very different path than a normal Ferengi. And so what I think this does for Quark is that over time, Quark learns a lot about how to interact with the other people on the crew, how Federation ideals are maybe not as crazy and dangerous as he thought they were through Nog, you know, through his interaction with his nephew, and as his nephew grows up. And I think that's one that I actually didn't think about very often, but if I do stop and think about it, Nog is an important influence on Quark.
Yeah, I think of the siege of AR-558 and that scene that happens between Odo and Nog. And Nog is really looking up to these Federation soldiers who have been on this planet for a really long time and have been holding out. And in some ways, looking at them as heroes. He even calls them heroes. And, you know, Quark pulls him down as he's about to get up and says, look around you. Look at these humans. You give them, you know, plenty of food, their hollow suites working, you know, roof over their head, clean clothes, they're going to be fine. You take all that away for an extended period of time, and they become as bloodthirsty as any Klingon out there. And I think that that relationship that he has with Nog for him helps reinforce some of the things that he believes about Ferenginar and Ferengis and their way of life. But that relationship, I think, it also challenges Quark to think differently and to look around him and see the honor of the way the Federation does or does not do things. You know, obviously, he still doesn't agree because he tells Nog that Ferengi would never have gone to war with the Dominion. They would have hammered out an agreement. Which, you know, it sounds noble, but at the same time, we wonder how much they would have been willing to give up to not go to war, which is what Nog points out.
Right.
So,
which I think they would compromise, you know, any beliefs or any ideals that they had if it would mean profit and no conflict with the Dominion.
Right. Which does a good job of showing kind of the weakness of what the Ferengi believe in. Right. And that, you know, the Federation, obviously there are times when freedom isn't free and you have to fight for it. And even the freedom to make profit.
Right.
And so,
yeah,
I think Nog brings out this very interesting conversation with Quark that wouldn't have happened if, you know, Nog hadn't chosen to go to Starfleet and be a completely different type of person than Quark would have wanted him to be.
Yeah, that is a good point. What about for you? What's another relationship that Quark had that stands out to you?
You know, I always think of him and Janzia. And what I think about this is that, and I think the reason that Quark loves her, and I really do think that Quark loves her in as much of a way as a Ferengi can love a woman. He loves her because she accepts him unconditionally. You know, she never asks him to change who he is. She just accepts him. And that's part of, I think, the Dax character of being somebody who's lived so many lifetimes and seen so many different types of people. And learn to live with people as they are, not as she wants them to be. And I think he really responds to that because it's the one person on the station who doesn't wish he was more like, you know, the Federation or the Bajorans, you know. It's the one person that will play his games. And I mean Tongo or Dabo or those kind of things. She respects Ferengi culture. She even sticks up for Ferengis and their culture from time to time. And so I think this relationship does a lot for Quark in giving him that kind of idea of acceptance and love, which we've talked a lot about with our characters in Deep Space Nine. And I've noticed the more that we've talked in depth about them, the more and more that this comes up as a motif. But I think that that's just because that's the motif of the human existence.
Yeah, and you could tell he really loves Jadzia, I think. And later on, actually seventh season, Shadows and Symbols, when he actually goes, very noble thing for Ferengi, he goes along with Worf on the mission to destroy the Dominion shipyards so that Jadzia can get into Stovokor. So, I mean, he actually, Jadzia's gone. He actually still cares about her ultimate existence. And not only that, but Stovokor being a Klingon belief, you see that Quark has also adapted to, whether he really believes in it or not, he can sense that it's important to Worf. He can sense that it would have been important to Jadzia. And so that's another thing that he does for her as a friend, as someone that he cares about.
Yeah, he doesn't do it very tactfully, that's for sure. Especially since Worf almost kills him quite a few times in that episode because of his snark.
But he does it,
yes,
though.
And for a Ferengi, yes. That's a big step. And I think,
right.
You know, Worf actually apologizes to him, which is a huge thing for Worf to do. And, you know, whether or not Quark thought it was enough for Worf to actually do that, I think is huge. And so
right.
It shows that a character like him can still have an impact on somebody like Worf, who does not really like him at all.
Right. Yeah, Worf did not care for Quark very much at all. All right.
That's putting it mildly.
Let's talk a little bit more about this change and the fact that as much as Quark wanted to be that good Ferengi in the beginning and follow the businesses, he also was kind of a rebel. I mean, he liked to go against the grain, have disregard for the law a bit, but he finally ultimately gets in trouble with the Ferengi Commerce Authority, and, you know, Brunt shows up, and then Quark has this big problem on his hands where his staff and the bar are going on strike. Now, how do you handle this as a Ferengi? And I think the way that he ultimately had to handle this illustrated this balancing act that he was trying to do between presenting himself as a great Ferengi to Brunt and the Commerce Authority, but also doing what he felt was the right, even if he does it grudgingly, inside I think felt like it was probably the right thing to do for the people working for him, who are really key to his success in business.
Well, I really do feel sorry for Quark. I mean, Jeffrey Combs is really the bane of his existence. You know, he was there before when he's trying to get him to make sexy holograms of Kira, and now he's back again trying to take away his bar and, you know, all that it stands for. So, man, this is just bad news for Quark. But I think you're right in the sense that Quark really inside, I think, knows the right thing to do is to give these people a raise.
Yeah.
But he's fighting it because he has to. He's a Ferengi. And if he doesn't fight it, he feels like he's less of a Ferengi. I think he's fighting that feeling of, I don't want to be my father. I don't want to be a failure. But as we notice, too, you know, once Quark gives in and gives them their demands, his bar seems to be a lot more popular because the workers seem to be a lot more happy. And so, you know, playing out this idea that we especially have in America, you know, you treat your workers well, you get better results for them and from them. And so it's a very sly, you know, kind of prodding to those people who are in power. Look, treat your people well, wherever they are, whether it's, you know, just kind of working in a retail establishment, you know, a food establishment, all those kind of jobs where people get to tend to be treated very poorly. And I worked retail for a very long time in my life. I can tell you, we get treated really poorly. It's all about the bottom dollar. And it feels a lot like working for a Ferengi.
Right, right. And it trickles down, and it ultimately affects the business's success and profit as well, right? Because you're not happy, so the customers feel that as well, and ultimately that impacts the potential for profit that you have. But yeah, this particular situation, I think, was yet another one of those turning points for Quark, and showed that he was really beginning to not think quite so much like a Ferengi at that point. Now, you mentioned something to me about the fact that, much in the way that Odo is a character that can be used to comment on humanity, Quark, well, of course Quark comments on humanity. That's, you know, quite obvious watching the show. But in particular, you mentioned that he's sort of a mouthpiece to comment on the... He challenges unfettered capitalism, is how you put it.
Yeah, I saw this in the whole series with the Ferengi. Is this idea that there are no rules or regulations, and when people are driven insanely by profit and they only want to make money, it makes everybody even more selfish than we already are. It makes us the worst of humanity. And I think really the goal of them using Ferengis like this, and I think that this is one of the reasons they kind of changed the Ferengis as the end of TNG and then Deep Space Nine came around, is they saw that there was going to be another way to kind of give us a social message that was going to be really important. And I think of the huge boom of the economy in the 90s. And this is a huge deal. I mean, a lot of people got taken advantage. We look at all the things that happened after that boom, the end of the dot-com era, the end of all of the ridiculous financial dealings of these companies, the Enron scandals, all of these things really pile up. And the Ferengi, I think, are a great mirror for us, especially in the West, to see that unfettered greed, unfettered capitalism is not going to be the answer, because it will destroy us, because our basest instincts kick in, and our basest instincts aren't good. They're really selfish. And I think the Ferengi do a lot to show us this. And I think in a lot of the ways that Quark grows, it shows just how much we have to grow as a society. I like that about Quark. I like that he challenges me in that kind of way and makes me have to think about myself so deeply, because, you know, I do live in the West. I'm very wealthy when it, compared to the rest of the world. I might not feel like it, but I am. And what I do with my wealth and how I earn my wealth is important, especially if it's on the backs of others in a way that harms them.
Right. So, yeah. So unfettered capitalism is the dangerous thing here. There's a balance, and Quark is a good character to show this too, because they're the Ferengi are one extreme. They are just the complete greed in capitalism. Whereas the Federation itself, in the way that it's often portrayed, is on the flip side of that. You know, the Federation itself is essentially a socialist system, the way it's presented a lot of the time, although it's presented inconsistently. And, you know, I hear a lot of people kind of kick and scream about the fact that the Federation is a terrible place and no one would ever want to live there, and it's a socialist future, because I don't actually think that that's what the Federation is. I think that if you cherry pick certain comments, like Picard's comments to Lily in First Contact, where he talks about how the economics of the future are somewhat different, and, you know, we don't use money, and we, you know, we work only to better ourselves. In reality, if you really, really look at everything going around the Federation, I don't think that that's necessarily the case. But at any point, that's for another discussion. But I think in the case of Quark's character, he's able to balance those two extremes, because he is Ferengi, he is dealing with the Federation, and in something like here where he has to decide whether to give his employees a raise, you are seeing kind of a balance between the pursuit of wealth, the pursuit of profits, and a system in which everyone is taken care of and people enjoy their work, and so there is some balance there. That'll be an interesting topic to come back to for a whole show at some point, I think.
Well, and I think one of the things too is that Quark begins in his life to invest in relationship. And he invests in the relationships we talked about, even with Odo or with Jenzia or the other members of his staff, people around him. We see that Quirk has, you know, got some very interesting love connections as well. I think of Grilka, you know, really doing all he can for her because he does really love her. You know, they have this wonderful relationship. In fact, I think of that, and I it's actually just kind of beautiful how these two people from completely opposite sides of the universe fall in love with each other. Or Natima, I think of, you know, the Cardassian that he had fallen in love with, and how he helps them escape, even into his own peril. You know, so Quirk, a lot of ways, finds that true investment in a lot of ways is not just about profit. It's about relationship. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that so we miss in capitalism that's been unhinged, is that it's about the impact that it has on others. I think that that's something that Quirk learns slowly. And obviously, even by the end of the series, he's still learning. He's still growing. He hasn't gotten it fully. Right. But I think that that's an important lesson that we can take as well.
Yeah. I think he grew a conscience as the series went on. And, you know, I think about that point at which he was going to get into arms dealing with his, well, I'd say he was going to, he did get into arms dealing with his cousin Gayla. But when he realized the extent to which that path to profit impacted others, he pulled back from that. And that is a turning point in his development as a person for me, and realizing there are those moments, you know, that the kind of snap.
I think, too, when you look at that, you know, somebody like Jenzia, who had always been on his side, even kind of shunned Quirk at that point.
Yeah.
And I think that, that he realized there's a line that I can cross where I'm going to lose everything that I hold dear. And what I hold dear is not just Latinum.
Yeah.
And that's a huge character jump for Quirk. And like you said, it's not just a conscience, but I think in some ways Quirk finds his soul, that, right. And it's not just made of money.
Yeah. Yeah. It was building up, you know, I said like he's changing, and I think he doesn't even realize that he's changing a lot of the time. He's kind of along for the ride. And it was at that moment where he had alienated pretty much everyone that it snapped him to attention, and then he started to actually take note of those changes, I think, and make a conscious decision that he had gone too far and it was time to step back.
Yeah, this is the, I think that this is a, you know, if we want to pinpoint a moment in Quirk's life in this series, this is one that is very pivotal for Quirk and who he is and kind of his character growth forward. Because this really, I think, sets Quirk up for who he's going to be in the Dominion War and what he's going to look like even in the novels afterwards. And so this is a really pivotal episode to have for Quirk because it's kind of a defining moment in his life.
Yeah. Well, let's transition into our final point, which is a wartime Ferengi. And when we get to near the end of the series, we start seeing Quirk, this guy who was just running a bar, who was staging vole fights, you know, doing anything to make a little extra money. We see him actually actively participating with his shipmates and the Federation in this war. You mentioned the siege of AR-558 a little bit earlier. I mentioned, you know, the fact that he went on this mission to the Dominion shipyards with Worf. And could you ever imagine in the first few seasons that you would ever see Worf participating in the conflict that way and actually fighting for a greater good?
You know, I couldn't. And when that came around, especially in Season 6, you know, they're trying to take back the station, and Quirk at the beginning is a little bit hesitant to join the resistance group that they formed. Right. He thinks it's a little foolhardy, but by the end, you know, Quark is right there in the thick of it, and in fact breaks them out of prison. Yeah. And which was awesome, you know. I mean, shoots the he's like, no, you move and you stay there.
Right.
Nobody move. You just told them not to move, you know. Just a, yeah, and so it's a fantastic scene, and it adds the humor of Quark kind of being involved, but he's there in the thick of it at that point. And it, again, I think it really goes to show just how much he's changed and what he's holding dear, and that Quark does not want to be under Dominion rule, because if there's anything worse than Federation rule, it's Dominion rule. And he will have lost everything again that he holds dear. And he's finding that what that is so much more than his latinum. And I love seeing Quark in this role and actively being a part of something like this that's really selfless, because he's not getting anything out of it monetarily.
I think the other question there is, do you feel like things naturally evolved to that point, or did you feel like, well, this is a really sudden change that they're making in Quark? In terms of the writing, was it jarring to you, or did it feel like, yeah, absolutely, this is what I would expect Quark to do at this point?
I think it feels like the culmination of Quark's journey to that point. And, you know, if he had just jumped in with both feet and really wanted to be involved, I think that that would have been too far. You know, you would have jumped the shark when it came to Quark's character. But, you know, he's very reticent. He doesn't want to be doing this. But he also doesn't want Dominion rule anymore. And so he does it against, in some ways, his own better judgment. He knows that it's the riskier move, because he's usually been on the side that's the winning side. He just picks whichever way the wind is blowing and gets on that side. But this is the one time where Quark can't do that. He finds himself put up against the wall and realizes he has to make a choice, and there really isn't a choice for him at this point anymore.
Yeah.
And I really do think that that's the culmination of his growth. Did you
I
feel
agree.
Like that this was too much, or did...
No, I think that having him be unsure about joining the resistance and forcing him to weigh the pros and cons, and then in the end he decides, yeah, I have to do this. I think that was everything up to that point. I mean, it was building towards this, and so it felt natural that Quark would want to help everyone. But like you said, the fact that he didn't just run up and say, oh, hey, Kira, I hear you got a resistance going, you know, can I get in on that? I'm glad they didn't do that. You know, he still wasn't quite sure, and then he made the decision, and that was the necessary transition, I think. But you had seen Quark growing towards this all the way through. All right, well, why don't we hit final thoughts on Quark? I'm actually going to start out, because the one thing I wanted to say as a final thought is that I find it, even people who love Deep Space Nine, even true Niners, I so often hear people say, you know, when I do my rewatch, I always skip all the Ferengi episodes, because they see Quark and the Ferengi as just being comic relief for what is really a heavy and dark show. But I'm a little surprised, because, I mean, I know there are some silly moments there with the Ferengi, and they definitely are comic relief for the show, but there's so much more to be had there in those Ferengi episodes, in a lot of them, and definitely ones that truly do center on Quark himself. What do you think about the idea of maybe Deep Space Nine doesn't need the Ferengi in the first place?
You know, I don't think that that's true. I think that what we've talked about with Quark makes him integral to the show. It gives us a lot to think about when we look at ourselves. And I think it's an interesting character growth and development. Again, I don't think that there are really any bad characters in Deep Space Nine. We've talked about before, you know, Jake Sisko. Even his character development, or lack thereof in some ways, I wouldn't trade Jake being there for him not being there. There's only one Ferengi episode. I will be honest. I do probably skip it, and that's when they turn Quirk into a woman.
Oh, yeah.
Lumba. That is an episode that I do not ever need to see again.
Why do you skip that? That's like the Bosom Buddies of Deep Space Nine. Come on.
It is. I'll say this. I wouldn't skip it every time, but it's not one I need to see very often. But otherwise, you know, I think the Ferengi episodes are great, especially the episode where they go to the Mirror Universe and they have to save Zeke. That's a fantastic episode. They have to save his mother from the Dominion. And of course, Iggy Pop is in that episode, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to like about Quirk. And I think, you know, without the humor that the Ferengi bring to this show, I don't know. I think you might have a show that would be too dark. But they bring a lightness to the show that really helps kind of level the show out throughout all the seasons. And so I don't understand all the Ferengi hate. I think they're funny. I think they're well done. And I think, again, they can teach us a lot about ourselves. And for that, I'm really thankful for Quirk being a character on Deep Space Nine and having gotten to spend 7 years with him.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot there, and it is good that they have the comic relief. But you can pull a lot out from watching Quark. Hopefully after people listen to us talk about all these aspects of Quark today, they can, when they do another rewatch of Deep Space Nine, they can, you know, watch Quark in a little bit different light and maybe see a little bit more of how his actions are changing him, and how he's affecting those around him on the station, how they're affecting him, and a lot of the very good social messages that are delivered through Quark, they're just sometimes done in a very different way than they are, say, through the prophets and Sisko or Kira. But it is all in there. Well, this has been a great discussion of Quark, Matthew. Let's tell everyone how to contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on Quark. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and send it to the Orb, and that'll come to Matthew and me. You can join us on our new forums, especially at trek.fm/forums, where there's a section devoted to the Orb. There's another section devoted to Deep Space Nine as well. And you can hop on there, talk to us about the show, and share your thoughts. You'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Matthew, what if people want to find you personally?
Well, you'll be able to find me on Literary Treks with you, talking books and comics, and then, of course, doing the book reviews on Trek FM. And then, of course, if you want to, and I hope you do, follow me on Twitter, MattRushing02, obviously talking Deep Space Nine, Star Trek, anything else that's coming up, whether it's, Star Trek Into Darkness or, you know, anything like that, of course, as well, be talking... It's a good day to die hard, or good day to die hard, as they've named it. That new movie with Worf and Bruce Willis. So really looking forward to that. So yeah, please follow me. Give me an at reply. Let me know you're following me, and we'll have a great conversation about any of those things.
Excellent. And if you want to find me, I am on Twitter as well. My username is C Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y, and I'm pretty much everywhere in social media under that username, so you can find me there and send me a note and chat me up. And also, Matthew, before we go, you know, because of the format of the show, we don't really read mail or read reviews on the show itself, but we did want to give a shout out to those who have left us reviews and ratings on iTunes. We'd like to thank Admiral Rex. We'd like to thank 49er Faithful, as well as our friend over in the UK, Michael Clark. So we really appreciate all the written reviews that you've left and everyone who's left just a star rating. And a note, if you do leave a review in a store other than the US store, please drop us a note and let us know. Apple does not give us a way to actually check everything universally. We have to go into every individual store. And so sometimes we don't actually know that they're there. But if you give us a heads up, we appreciate that. And definitely stop by and leave us a rating. It somehow helps people find the show to help things rise up in the iTunes results when people search for Star Trek in Deep Space Nine.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.